This morning, we read together a canticle, a hymn straight out of the text of our Holy Scriptures. This hymn is one of two in the second chapter of the Gospel of Luke, and one of three found in the first three chapters of Luke. One of the other hymns is sometimes called the Magnificat, or the Song of Mary. And we're going to hear that one in 2 weeks on the fourth Sunday of Advent. The other is the Nunc Dimittis, or the Song of Simeon. And it's one that we might be familiar with as we say or sing it at evening prayer services and sometimes at funerals. The hymn we have this morning is the Benedictus, or the Song of Zechariah. It's a beautiful song that celebrates the favor of God resting upon God's people, the response of God's people, and the light to the world that comes from this relationship. The story around this song always makes me smile. This song is the first thing out of Zechariah's mouth after more than 9 months of silence. You might recall the story. Zechariah and his wife Elizabeth are good people, both descendants of a long line of priests who serve God in God's temple in Jerusalem. They've been faithful, and they've kept all that was asked of them by the commandments of God. Like other couples in the Bible, Sarah and Abraham, Hannah and Elkanah, to name just a couple, Elizabeth and Zechariah have been unable to have children. And while today we have technology that can help to figure out the medical reasons why that might be the case, then it was seen as a curse from God. Zechariah is a priest in Jerusalem. One day when he was on duty in the temple, he was chosen to go into the holiest part of the temple and offer incense to God. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So he goes, and while he's there, an angel appears to him and tells him that he and Elizabeth will have a baby, and that this baby will be none other than John the Baptist, who will be a great prophet who will prepare the way for God's Messiah. But Zechariah doesn't believe the angel, and he says so, which was his first mistake. So the angel tells him that all of this is going to still happen, but he's not going to be able to speak for the duration of Elizabeth's pregnancy. 9 months pass, quietly, one might assume. The baby is born. He's named John. And suddenly Zechariah's mouth is opened, and this song that has been 9 months in the making flows from his mouth. It's beautiful, and it's prophetic. But I feel like something is missing from this whole story. 9 months of something. So often in the scriptures, we have to read between the lines to hear the stories of the women in the Bible. Take Elizabeth, for example. The recorded version of the story of the birth of her son, John the Baptist, is more about her husband, Zechariah, than it is about her. We hear very little about her, other than one story that we read of an encounter she has with another woman, her cousin, Mary. When Elizabeth is about 6 months pregnant with John, when Mary comes to visit, herself newly expecting, we read that John, in Elizabeth's womb, leapt in recognition of the baby that Mary was carrying, Jesus. But other than that, the text is silent when it comes to Elizabeth. What must those 9 months of silence meant for her? What was it like for her to be an older woman pregnant for the first time with a husband who can't speak and unable to talk with her about their joys, about their concerns? Did she end up having to take on more of the work and the care in their household? Did she feel lonely at times? This morning at Holy Trinity, we are celebrating women. This morning is corporate communion for the dedicated women of the Anglican Church women here at Holy Trinity, a group of women who work tirelessly, often behind the scenes, to build up this church community. Their work may be sometimes unseen, but it's definitely not unnoticed. And so today, as we celebrate women, for just a couple more minutes, I want to switch hats, and I'm going to put on my hat for the Primates World Relief and Development Fund. I've been privileged to be involved with PWRDF, our national church's arm for relief and development, both within Canada and overseas. I've been involved with them for almost a decade now, first as a member of the Youth Council, and now in my fifth year on the board of directors. Much of the work of PWRDF supports women around the world. Women who often have the worst of health outcomes due to poor conditions for carrying and delivering babies. Women who often have to bear the majority of caring for their families and running their homes. Women who are more likely to be subjected to gender-based violence or at risk of human trafficking and modern-day slavery. So in honor of women, named and unnamed, in our readings this morning, and all of the women here, I want to tell you the stories of just a couple of women, named and unnamed, whose lives you have helped to change through your long support of the Primates World Relief and Development Fund. I want to tell you about the nurses who work for our partners in Mozambique and the women whose babies they deliver. On average, one nurse delivers 198 babies a month, most of them in complete darkness because, for whatever reason, babies seem to prefer to be born in the middle of the night. And up until recently, there had been no electricity in the health clinics. In order to see what they were doing, particularly with difficult births, the nurses had been delivering babies with their cell phones held between their teeth to provide even just a little bit of light to see by. As one of the nurses was talking about this challenge with some of the PWRDF staff, one of our staff recalled seeing a news story about a company who was developing solar suitcases. Solar suitcases are small, carry-on-sized suitcases that are actually fully self-contained portable solar power units. So PWRDF staff made a connection between that company and between our partners in Mozambique. And now, solar suitcases have been installed in all of the health clinics run by our partners in Mozambique. And the health workers have been trained to install, run, and maintain them. These suitcases can power a battery, give power for chargers, lamps, and monitors that keep an eye on the baby while in the womb. And they've been dramatically impacting and improving the nurse's ability to provide safe delivery. In fact, safe delivery has skyrocketed, and problems for maternal and newborn child health have dropped now that there's just a little bit of light and some simple instruments to care for the pregnant women in these health clinics. I also want to tell you about our partners in Guatemala. PWRDF has been working with two organizations there since 1997, Madre Tierra and Ishmukene. Last year, I had the opportunity to meet Gregoria and Raquel, who are the executive directors of these two organizations. Both are organizations that support women, particularly indigenous women in Guatemala and in their communities. Both Gregoria and Raquel had to flee Guatemala to escape the massacres of their people in the 1980s. They They escaped as the army surrounded their villages, and they walked over mountains and rivers, leaving everything behind. They came together in refugee camps in Mexico and formed little communities in the camp. And these communities began to build relationships and get to know each other. Living in the camps, says Raquel, was the catalyst for the women to discover themselves. And the women living in the camp where Gregoria lived began to get together to bake bread and then to sell it, having an income for the first time in their lives. And this was their first step in learning how to have their own voice and participate in the life and the direction of their communities. After they returned to different regions of Guatemala and began to rebuild their lives there, they didn't stop building bread, and they didn't stop gathering together for the benefit of their communities. The women took on the tasks of securing food and securing land for their families. And because they were used to being organized together in the camps, they went to the government and successfully negotiated with the government to give women the right to own land for the first time and continued to participate in the process of governance. Since their return home, these two organizations, Madre Tierra and Eshmukene, they've continued to form to work with and through the women in their communities to increase economic stability and end discrimination and violence against women. They've been working to recover and teach agricultural skills to the women so that they would have more skills to grow the food for their families. And they've also begun to offer midwifery training for the women in their communities. Many of the women who have been impacted by the work of Madre Tierra and Eshmukene are now leaders in their regional councils and in their communities. When telling us about all the progress her organization has made over the last few years, Raquel teared up and said that all of the support they've received from working with PWRDF has been crucial to their survival. Because, she said, when others left, you stayed. And these are just two stories of the dozens of programs supported by PWRDF that specifically empower women and lift up the lives of those who often carry the weight of their family and their community while laboring behind the scenes. These are the women, like Elizabeth and Mary, Raquel and Gregoria, nurses and midwives, expectant mothers, caring sisters and cousins. These are the women to whom we are connected to by faith and by prayer, around the world and across generations, as we labor together to daily give birth to Christ around us. So that in the words of the song of Zechariah, sung after Elizabeth gave birth to John, by the tender mercy of our God, the dawn from on high will break upon us to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet in the way of peace. Amen.